This is not complicated. It's not hard to design. We've got one message today. Tell Elon Musk to take his hands off your money.
That's a good message. Good luck, Senator.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV. Out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets and the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. You'll be shocked to learn we got a lot to cover today.
A swell fellow if exhausted.
Yes, indeed, already. Not even three weeks into this thing. Anyway, let me start here. Late on Monday night, here in the U.S., Beijing announced a broad package of economic measures targeting the United States, hitting back after Donald Trump imposed a 10% tariff on Chinese imports. The fresh duties announced by China's Ministry of Finance levy a 15% tax on certain types of coal and liquefied natural gas, and a 10% tariff on crude oil. And other things such as agricultural machinery, certain cars and pickup trucks. The measures are scheduled to take effect on February 10. The announcements come as a broad-based 10% tariff on Chinese imports to the United States was announced by the White House on Saturday. And as those tariffs came into effect, the Chinese tariffs in response, target at most $20 billion of the country's annual imports from the U.S., about 12% of the total. That is a far cry from the more than $450 billion in Chinese goods being targeted by the U.S. That, of course, is smart for China. They know that even if Trump pretends he doesn't know, tariffs end up targeting domestic consumers who end up paying the higher tax on those imported goods. So where Trump has just slapped an inflationary tax on $450 billion in goods coming into the U.S., that'll actually be paid by American consumers. China, for their part, has only added a tax to $20 billion worth of goods coming into their country for now. In the meantime, China's Commerce Ministry confirmed that it had brought the Trump administration's tariff measures to the World Trade Organization, to the WTO dispute settlement mechanism, announcing the U.S. practice seriously undermines the rules-based multilateral trading system, undermines the foundation of economic and trade cooperation between China and the U.S., and disrupts the stability of the global industrial chain and the supply chain. You might remember the supply chain being discussed quite a bit during the pandemic. First when Donald Trump was in charge, and then when Joe Biden was in charge, and the supply chain fell apart, and prices shot up thanks to inflation.
And now Trump wants to do that all over again.
Don't he, though? The White House had announced the 10% tariffs on Chinese imports on Saturday as part of a broader trade measures also targeting Mexico and Canada, though those tariffs of 25%, those are currently on hold after both countries announced that they would slap tariffs of 25% in turn onto imported U.S. goods into their country. And after they pretended to make concessions to Donald Trump, who then backed down from his threats, at least for another month. The 10% duties against China are a far cry from the upwards of 60% tariffs that Trump had threatened to levy on China during his campaign. But for now, since crude and liquefied natural gas and coal are generally priced on the global futures market, the prices of all of them, even for, yes, American consumers, is very likely to go up, which should make Donald Trump's funders in the fossil fuel industry very happy, even if his own voters, who will now likely be paying more for gas and home heating oil and natural gas and so forth because of all of this, well, they might not be very happy about it. That is, if they even know about it. So I am hoping to let them know. Y'all can start buying your "Trump did this" stickers for the gas pumps, if you like. And as Desi Doyen will explain, along with a bunch of other important stuff in her Green News report a bit later this hour. Hi, Des.
Hello.
Even though Trump has backed down from his threats of 25% tariffs against our two biggest and friendliest trading partners, Canada and Mexico, even his threat against Canada, our biggest foreign supplier of fossil fuels, will also cause prices to spike on the global market. She'll explain why. Anyway, that's coming up in a bit, because contrary to myth, Donald Trump is not putting America or Americans first. He's putting himself first and his billionaire buddies first. You MAGA folks, and I know you're listening, you MAGA folks will figure that out eventually, and boy, will it be embarrassing for you in front of your children and your grandchildren when you do. So welcome to the broadcast. Donald Trump's attack on America and Americans, some of which we discussed in detail on yesterday's riveting broadcast, continues apace today, of course. Though if you look closely, there are more and more signs of an emerging opposition to the lawless, convicted felon turned president of the United States. You heard Ron Wyden there at a rally out in front of the Treasury Department on Tuesday at the top of the show. I'll have more about that in a bit. But we're seeing opposition points emerge in elected officials, elected Democrats, agency insiders, and whistleblowers, either pushing back against the administration or otherwise informing the public and the media of what is going on inside their agencies right now, as Trump and his co-president Elon Musk attempt to destroy those agencies from the inside and the important work that they do for the American public. Also, civil lawsuits are being filed by both affected individuals at those agencies and by outside groups attempting to enforce the rule of law, now that agencies like the DOJ and the FBI and inspectors general have been largely and quite effectively neutered by this lawless president.
Oh, I would use the word decapitated.
As the it's funny because I see them as the stinking head of a rotting fish.
Well, that works.
This lawless president. And of course, public pressure is calls to elected officials attending these protest rallies, etc. And, of course, the role that the media play in letting you know about all of this. So public opinion might change as a wildly disinformed public last November perhaps becomes somewhat more accurately informed as we all move forward. All of these things are beginning to emerge, it seems, and to organize slowly but surely, I think, in opposition to what Trump and his lackeys and flunkies are doing as they wield their wrecking ball across the whole of the American government. We'll hit on some of those elements today as new points of opposition in all of those categories continue to emerge. And Trump's MAGA chieftains know that the pushback is mounting. I'll give you an example. On Tuesday, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, both uniquely unqualified for the roles that they've been nominated for in Trump's cabinet, Bobby to head up Health and Human Services, Tulsi as Director of National Intelligence, they both narrowly cleared partisan committee votes in the U.S. Senate on Tuesday. It was thought, by the way, that Republican Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana might just maybe show a bit of backbone to vote against the anti-vaccine advocate Bobby Kennedy after one of his two Senate confirmation hearings as Trump's nominee to head up HHS, overseeing the nation's medical apparatus at the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. Because Senator Cassidy is a medical doctor himself. Well, silly us. Of course, like all Republicans in the Trump age, Cassidy folded like a limp, wet dish rag, and he sided with his party to vote the dangerously unqualified Kennedy out of the Senate Finance Committee, helping him to clear a major hurdle before his nomination heads to the Senate floor for a full vote. Of course, the atmosphere on the right now is not great for potential obstructionists. So a vote by Cassidy against Kennedy, of course, would have almost assured that he would be primaried out of his job when he is up for re-election in 2026. And, of course, his job is much more important than the country to Republicans like him. So, yeah, he's not going to end up in the opposition. And if you have any questions about that, well, you can see this tweet, I believe last night, from QAnon chieftain and MAGA madman General Michael Flynn, who writes on Elon Musk's X in all caps, quote, "Final warning. This is my final warning as it relates to confirmations of real Donald Trump's nominees. If there are people inside of the Office of Director of National Intelligence, the CIA, or the FBI that are working to subvert the nominations of Tulsi Gabbard, Cash Patel, or Robert Kennedy Jr., I am writing to let you know you better stop now and think before you go any further. Think before you go any further," in all caps. "There are so many people that are ready to be whistleblowers, and there is so much reporting currently flowing out, not classified leaks, but leaks of subversive and treasonous behavior. This has to end," writes Michael Flynn in all caps, "and trust, if it doesn't, you will be caught and you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law." That's the kind of crap that's happening on the right. That's the kind of stuff, the kind of threats that are being thrown around. That's how terrified these people are that people will stand up for the right thing in the opposition to madmen like Michael Flynn. Prosecuted? Prosecuted for what? And does it actually matter? So I was glad to read today that some at the FBI, at least, aren't being cowed by deranged, power-mad clowns like Michael Flynn. And in the bargain, the opposition seems to be emerging anyway, despite the tough guy threats. Earlier this week, we reported on Brian Driscoll, the acting director of the FBI and head of the Bureau's Newark field office, who pushed back aggressively against DOJ orders to proffer a list of names of investigators and analysts and other field agents who in any capacity worked on January 6 cases against Trump-incited insurrectionists. He made clear Driscoll did in a memo to agents across the FBI that he was attempting to stand up for the rule of law, which mandates, by the way, that career officials at the FBI cannot be fired without cause. And that he himself was among those thousands of agents who worked on January 6 cases, given that it was the largest investigation in the Bureau's history. Driz, as he signs his name, emerged as a bit of an early opposition hero of sorts, even as he moved forward with the Trump administration's directive to begin identifying anyone who worked on January 6 cases anywhere in the country. And today, as CNN reports this afternoon, FBI officials have complied with demands to provide the Justice Department with details of thousands of employees who worked on investigations related to the January 6 Capitol riot, according to people familiar with the situation. The demand has caused consternation among FBI employees who fear it is meant to amass a list of personnel for possible termination by the Trump administration. And of course, they're right. Acting Deputy Attorney General Emile Bove, I think that's how you say his name, he's Trump's personal defense attorney who has now become the acting Deputy Attorney General at DOJ. In a Friday memo, he wrote with the subject line terminations that he wrote a memo that had been given that had given FBI officials a noon deadline as of Tuesday to submit the details of thousands of agents and analysts. Bove had previously ordered the firing of eight senior FBI officials, including those who oversaw cybersecurity, national security, criminal investigations. By the way, losing decades of institutional knowledge at what is supposed to be or used to be the world's leading law enforcement agency. But of course, all of that, losing that institutional knowledge, that too is by design. More than 5,000 employee details were submitted in response, including employee ID numbers, job titles, and their role in the January 6 investigations. Meanwhile, officials dispatched by Elon Musk, previously seen taking control with Donald Trump's apparent permission of computers and agencies such as the Treasury Department. We'll get to that in a bit. But Musk's personal employees have now reportedly been seen at FBI headquarters as Musk heads up his extra-governmental, extra-constitutional so-called DOGE, or Department of Government Efficiency. But several FBI employees pushed back on that on Tuesday by suing the Justice Department, accusing it of violating the Constitution and privacy laws by demanding that agents complete a survey allegedly designed to, quote, purge Bureau personnel. The agents want a federal judge to block the Trump administration from publishing or releasing the surveys that they received or any information included in their answers in those 5,000 surveys. The lawsuit alleges, quote, the very act of compiling lists of persons who worked on matters that upset Donald Trump is retaliatory in nature, intended to intimidate FBI agents and other personnel and to discourage them from reporting any future malfeasance by Donald Trump and his agents. The survey that FBI personnel were required to fill out included questions about their positions at the Bureau, their specific roles in January 6 probes, including whether they executed arrests, participated in grand jury investigations, or testified at trials. So that is according to the lawsuit. That information we got from the lawsuit. That lawsuit alone is a way for agency officials to get the word out about what is going on inside their agencies. So kudos to the several anonymous FBI employees who brought that lawsuit as part of a class action complaint. The effort to fire anyone involved in Trump-related probes has been slowed in part by pushback from agents, including some who are working with new administration officials, who are pushing for cultural changes at FBI headquarters that Kash Patel, Trump's pick for FBI director, has threatened. Groups representing current and former agents reached out to congressional Republicans to urge the White House to abide by Kash Patel's promise in his Senate hearing last week. He promised that agents would not face any political retribution for working on January 6 cases that they were assigned to work on. We'll see if that turns out to be true. But FBI employees who for months have braced for massive changes with Trump's election victory, they've nonetheless reportedly been surprised at attempts to punish agents and analysts who don't have a choice on which cases they get assigned to. Last month, the Justice Department fired more than a dozen officials who worked on the federal criminal investigation into Trump's own felony crimes, such as attempting to steal the 2020 election, stealing top-level national security documents when he left office. Like many in law enforcement, CNN notes, the FBI workforce generally leans Republican. And in fact, CNN doesn't mention it, but every single FBI director that has ever existed since its inception has, in fact, been a Republican, even under Democratic presidents. So that's the FBI that has been weaponized against who? Republicans? Really? So as CNN reports, the move to conduct a broader purge of those who worked on the J6 cases has been shocking to many of these folks. On Monday, a group of advocacy organizations representing federal law enforcement officers urged congressional leaders to prevent the Trump administration from purging career officials at FBI. Quote, "Do not resign or offer to resign," the FBI Agents Association told members in an email obtained by CNN. Quote, "While we would never advocate for physical noncompliance, you need to be clear your removal is not voluntary." Separately, lawyers for prosecutors and FBI agents called the possible dismissals of employees who worked on Trump-related probes a, quote, "violation of the due process rights," and threatened legal action in a letter to senior DOJ officials Sunday night. Quote, "If you proceed with terminations and or public exposure of terminated employees' identities, we stand ready to vindicate their rights through all available legal means," the lawyers wrote. Again, to Trump's personal defense lawyer and now acting DOJ Deputy Attorney General. But perhaps the most passionate response came from a guy by the name of James Dennehy, the top leader of the FBI's New York field office, who told his staff that he's preparing to, quote, "dig in to defend them." The New York FBI office, by the way, has been notoriously pro-Republican over years past. But even they are apparently starting to feel some pain. CNN obtained a copy of Dennehy's email to his staff, which reads in part, quote, "I still remember the first time I dug a foxhole in the Marines back in 1993. I had nothing more than an E-tool, an entrenching tool, that I carried around everywhere, which was a mini 2-foot-long shovel. I dug with that damn thing all day long to build myself a 2-by-2-foot hole in the hard ground about 5 feet deep. It sucked, but it worked. That foxhole provided me the protection I needed for the battle that was to come. And when the bullets flew, it was worth the effort." He goes on to say in his email to staff, "Today we find ourselves in the middle of a battle of our own, as good people are being walked out of the FBI and others are being targeted because they did their jobs in accordance with the law and FBI policy. On a day like today," he writes, "I find myself searching for my old E-tool, ready to put in the sweat and effort to dig that foxhole, as I have a feeling that I need to do right by this office. I will support each and every one of you with whatever personal decisions you make, but I'm sticking around to defend you, your work, your families, and this team we call the flagship. Time for me to dig in," wrote Dennehy. Well, good for him.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, sir. another one of today's examples of opposition emerging from inside executive agencies. Opposition assemble. Then there are elected officials, elected Democrats, some of who are, at least I hope, finally beginning to find their footing in the opposition. Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii, Democrat, said he would place a, quote, blanket hold on all of President Trump's State Department nominees until the administration's attack on the leading U.S. Foreign Assistance Agency, that would be the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, until that attack ends, a move that threatens to stall Trump's ability to get his foreign policy team in place. Well, good. That's what the opposition should be doing. U.S. senators have certain powers. Many of them are sort of from these entrenched Senate traditions to block votes for certain things and certain nominees in their committees. They can do it, you know, just on their own. You'll recall Looney Tunes wingnut Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama during the Biden administration. He put a blanket hold on promotions for hundreds of military generals unless the Biden administration changed their policy at the time at the Pentagon, allowing out-of-state travel for those seeking abortions in states where big government Republican restrictions had banned the procedure. So, good. Brian Schatz seems to be taking advantage of that same Senate rule or tradition to block the nomination of everybody for the State Department until Trump stops his attack on USAID. So he seems to be doing similar to what Tommy Tuberville did, but he's doing it for a good cause instead of sheer wingnut idiocy, trying to defend, frankly, the Constitution and the entire country. His move, presuming Republicans who are in the majority don't use this opportunity to unilaterally change the rules and say, well, we're going to have these votes anyway. We don't care what Brian Schatz says. It would leave several bureaus and offices in the State Department without senior leadership, according to Wall Street Journal, complicating U.S. diplomatic efforts under Donald Trump. And to be frank, I'm not sure why Schatz is not putting a hold on every Trump nomination or why every Democratic senator is not doing what Schatz is doing. But it is a start, I guess. His action comes in response to Musk and his Doge boys shutting down USAID on Monday, cutting off employee email accounts, barring them from the building. Trump's freeze on billions of dollars of congressionally appropriated life-saving foreign aid, critical to U.S. diplomatic efforts around the world, and what Musk describes as Trump's agreement that USAID will be entirely shut down for good, even though they have no legal authority to do that without the approval of Congress. Democratic lawmakers on Monday gathered at the agency's Washington headquarters to protest the Trump administration's proposed closure of USAID. We played a little bit of that rally yesterday. Here's a little bit more as Schatz himself was one of those Democrats who joined the quickly assembled rally outside USAID headquarters. For a rally that was attended by hundreds of members of the public.
There is a reason that USAID is an arm of American foreign policy, and it is because we understand that a stable world means a stable America. And in the last 10 days, Donald Trump has done more to destabilize things across the planet than perhaps any other president in recent memory. And one final point. They are counting on some sense of inevitability. This is a bluff. It is a harmful, dangerous, killer bluff. But they don't have the law on their side. And so every civil servant, every contractor, every individual who is scared, stand in solidarity with each other, because if we are going to push back on this kind of autocratic behavior, it's not just members of Congress that have to stand up, and we will.
Yes.
It is all of us together.
It is all of us together. He's right. So Schott said that he expects the judicial system may at least temporarily stop DOJ's attempts to close USAID, noting, quote, you cannot wave a wand and eliminate a department established by federal law. So it will be reversed in court, said Schott. We will see. On Monday, personnel at USAID woke up to an email barring them from showing up for work, that after two security officials at the agency tried to prevent Musk's Doge bros from taking over the building before the security officials, also opposition heroes as I see it, were unlawfully fired for doing their job. The Washington Post reports that President Donald Trump is now preparing an executive order aimed at eventually closing the Education Department and, in the short term, dismantling it from within, according to three people on who were familiar with this order. The draft order acknowledges that only Congress can shut down the department and instead directs the agency instead to begin diminishing itself, the people said, speaking on condition of anonymity. That work, they said, is already underway at the Education Department. The new administration has been trying to reduce the workforce by putting scores of employees on administrative leave and pressuring staff to voluntarily quit. And yes, roughly 20 people with Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, none of them elected or approved by the Senate for any of this stuff. 20 people within DOGE have begun working inside of the Education Department looking to cut spending and staff, according to records obtained by the Washington Post and three people familiar with what was going on inside the department. At least some DOGE staffers have gained access to multiple sensitive internal systems, according to the people, including a financial aid data set that contains the personal information for millions of students enrolled in the federal aid program. Kids, children, whose details could be now exposed to the public. The expected executive order would not shut down the agency, because there's widespread agreement, apparently, in both parties that the Education Department was created by Congress, so it cannot be eliminated without a vote of Congress. Plus, it would require at least a supermajority of 60 votes in the Senate, meaning that at least 7 Democrats would have to support the plan to close the Department of Education. But hey, don't underestimate Democrats. A 2023 vote, however, in the House to abolish the department, considered as an amendment to another bill, garnered 161 yes votes, but 60 Republicans joined every Democrat in voting no for shutting down the Department of Education, and the bill was defeated. So in the meantime, Trump's executive order is expected to direct the department to come up with a plan to diminish its own staff and its own functions. Just get rid of all the staff, get rid of everything that it does, and, you know, we'll still have a Department of Education that just won't do anything, I guess, to shut itself down, if you will, from the inside. And the Doge boys now seem to be trying to figure out how to do that with access to the computer systems there. It was unclear how detailed all of this would be, but the Project 2025 goes into some detail, even though a lot of the things that the Education Department does are actually specified in law. For instance, Project 2025 recommends that the student loan program move over to the Treasury Department and that civil rights enforcement shift over to the Justice Department, where, of course, it can be ignored because the DOJ Civil Rights Department has been ordered to pretty much stand down and take no action since Trump took over. So we'll see, because a lot of that stuff is in the 1979 law that established the department, specifying that the agency, quote, shall include an office for civil rights and an office of elementary and secondary education. So they cannot just shut it down. And in many instances, they cannot just move stuff over from one place to the other. Already, the National Student Legal Defense Network, an advocacy group, is looking at a legal challenge to any effort to dismantle the agency, saying, quote, effectively shutting down the Department of Education through executive order or mass firings is a recipe for chaos that will disrupt the lives of students across the country. Trying to do so without Congress is not only short-sighted, but illegal and unconstitutional, said Aaron Ament, who is president of the group. And in response to another Doge bro takeover, Politico reported last night federal employee unions on Monday sued to stop Musk's team from accessing the sensitive government system that controls the flow of trillions of dollars in payments as top Democrats stepped up their attacks on what they said was the billionaire's hostile takeover of the Treasury Department. We'll take a quick break and we will come back and talk about that and who these Doge bros actually seem to be. That's straight ahead on the broadcast along with Desi Doyen and her Green News Report.
Yep.
I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. On Monday, Democratic opposition leaders held a rollicking rally in front of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, as Elon Musk's Doge boys had shut it down. And on Tuesday afternoon, just before air today, I believe, many of those Democrats held another rally outside of the Treasury Department, where it was reported over the weekend that Elon Musk's employees, his personal employees, not federal officials, but Musk's personal employees, had taken over the computer payment system of the U.S. Treasury, which handles some $6 trillion of annual checks written by the U.S. Here was Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy earlier today.
Reach out to everyone in this country, conservatives, liberals, Republicans, Democrats, and tell them that we have not months, we have not weeks, but we have days to stop the destruction of our democracy. We have work to do. And so we will fight with you to make sure that in this country, it is the people that rule. It is the people that rule, not the billionaires. We are taking back this country from Elon Musk. Thank you, everybody.
That was Senator Chris Murphy on Tuesday outside the U.S. Treasury Department. Now, as we detailed yesterday, over the weekend, his personal employees took over the Treasury Department's computer payment system, which writes, you know, $6 trillion annually in Social Security checks, Medicare payments, tax refunds, foreign aid, paychecks to federal workers, veterans, disability payments, and pretty much every check that the U.S. government writes. Well, the Alliance for Retired Americans, along with the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, whose political director was a guest on this program last week, And the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, claim that Musk's efforts may have illegally exposed the personal data of millions of federal employees, as well as other individuals who do business with the federal government, exposed it to unauthorized Doge personnel. Quote, the scale of the intrusion of individuals' privacy is massive and unprecedented, the group said in their complaint. It accuses the Trump administration of illegally granting Musk's team access in violation of federal laws that govern the privacy of agency records and protect the confidentiality of taxpayer information. Quote, granting Doge-affiliated individuals full, continuous, and ongoing access to that information for an unspecified period of time means that retirees, taxpayers, federal employees, companies, and other individuals from all walks of life have no assurance that their information will receive the protection that federal law affords, the complaint says. And because defendants' actions and decisions are shrouded in secrecy, individuals will not even have basic information about what personal or financial information that defendants are sharing with outside parties or how their information is being used. Hopefully, thanks to this lawsuit, we will find out what information is being exposed and how that information is being used. So lawsuits, civil suits, elected officials speaking out. President Donald Trump earlier on Monday said that he supports Musk's efforts when he was asked about the billionaire's Doge team having access to sensitive systems at the U.S. Treasury. He said from the Oval Office, quote, Elon can't do and won't do anything without our approval. So good. Glad he said that. It means that everything that Musk and his flunkies are doing is actually an act of Donald Trump's. I kind of thought he'd be smart enough to, you know, keep enough distance that he could claim plausible deniability.
Just a little.
But nope, looks like I've underestimated that dumbass again. Whatever laws the Musk boys break are laws that Trump is breaking, even though he is immune, of course, from criminal charges thanks to his corrupted U.S. Supreme Court. But at least we know who to blame when he tries to claim that he had nothing to do with it. And then, of course, when the Doge boys break the law, he'll just pardon them. But at least we will know what is going on thanks to these lawsuits, thanks to these whistleblowers on the inside, thanks to these Democrats who are trying at least to hold the line. So who exactly are these Doge boys? Who are getting access to or stealing access to the keys to the kingdom with the apparently blessing of the king himself? Well, as Wired reported last week, there are apparently a bunch of engineer tech kids, pretty much fresh out of high school, some of them, or college, that Musk has hired to work at his various companies. One of them was reported on but remained unnamed in a report by Wired last week because apparently this person was still a minor. Late last night, Wired reported on the kid who now has access to the entire U.S. payment system and apparently has full and complete access to rewrite the code if he wants to. A 25-year-old engineer named Marco Iles, who previously worked for two Elon Musk companies, now has direct access to Treasury Department systems responsible for nearly all payments made by the U.S. government, according to three sources who talked to Wired. Two of those sources say that Iles' privileges include the ability not just to read, but also to write code on two of the most sensitive systems in the U.S. government, the Payment Automation Manager and Secure Payment System at the Bureau of Fiscal Service, which is housed on a top secret mainframe inside the U.S. Department of Treasury. These systems control, on a granular level, Wired reports, government payments that in their totality amount to more than a fifth of the U.S. economy. Despite reporting that suggests that Musk's so-called Doge task force has access to these Treasury systems on a read-only level, sources say Ilez has many administrative-level privileges. Typically, those admin privileges could give someone the power to log in to servers through shell access remotely and navigate the entire file system and change user permissions and delete or modify critical files just by having that access. That could also allow someone to bypass the security measures of and potentially cause irreversible changes to the very systems that they have access to. These systems are very closely guarded, as you might imagine, or at least they used to be. Access is given to just a handful of senior nonpartisan officials. In fact, the one who oversaw the system after working at Treasury for decades was pushed out late last week as the Doge boys came in and he tried to stop them. One source with knowledge of the system tells Wired you could do anything with these privileges. They add that they cannot conceive of a reason that anyone would need such access for purposes of simply hunting down fraudulent payments or analyzing disbursement flow. The source says, if you would have asked me a week ago, I'd have told you that this kind of thing would never in a million years happen, but now, well, who the F knows? Ilez, according to the public databases and other records reviewed by Wired, is a 25-year-old who has graduated from Rutgers University just in 2021. He subsequently worked at SpaceX, then Twitter. Broadly speaking, the U.S. government pays out money in one of two ways. Agencies like the Department of Defense and the Postal Service are legally authorized to originate and issue payments on their own, but the vast majority of payments, including federal tax returns, Social Security benefits, supplemental security income benefits, veterans pay, all of that flows through the federal disbursement services at the department, which, according to Treasury, put out almost $6 trillion in fiscal year 2024. The payment automation manager and the secure payment system are the mechanism through which that money is paid out that this guy, who nobody knows, and they didn't even know his first or last name until it was just reported out by Wired, he now has access to all of this. And control of those mechanisms, they note, could allow someone to choke off all of that money, or at least to specific federal agencies, or even to specific individuals. Talking Points Memo's Josh Marshall was working on a similar story when Wired broke their own overnight. Josh says that he can confirm that this 25-year-old now has full access to the system's code base. And not just read-only access, as some had apparently been incorrectly reporting, giving Ilez direct control to the code that directly controls and pays out roughly 95% of payments made by the U.S. government. The Doge team, now inside of the Treasury Department computers, which appears to be mainly or only Ilez, according to Josh, has already made extensive changes to the code for the payment system. He says phrases like freaking out are not surprisingly used to describe the reaction of the engineers who were responsible for maintaining the code base until a week ago. The changes that have been made all seem to relate to creating new paths to block payments and possibly leave less visibility into what has been blocked. He notes that he is emphasizing that the described changes are not being tested in a development environment, for example, a not live environment, but have already been pushed through into production, into the live environment.
Oh, God. That's bad.
That's real bad. He says, to give some further sense of the atmosphere, you seem to have multiple government engineers and programmers who are being pressed into assisting ELEZ and doing code reviews, terrified that the whole system will end up going down. Meanwhile, Marco, who has now been identified as Marco ELEZ by Wired, refuses to identify himself to most or likely all of these new colleagues by anything other than his first name. Josh says, I suspect that the publication of Wired's article was the first time most or perhaps all of them learned his last name or even got assurance that Marco wasn't some kind of alias. Yikes. I will note, however, I take some comfort in the fact that the people other than the Doge boys inside the system are, in fact, talking to people like Josh Marshall at TPM and the folks at Wired. They, too, are part of the opposition right now, and I'm glad that they are talking to the media and that there are still elements of the media who are willing and unafraid of reporting what they are learning to the public. Opposition, assemble. Desiree's latest Green News report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. And of course, here to make everything better as usual is Desi Doyen with our latest Green News Report.
I think Canadians are a little perplexed as to why our closest friends and neighbors are choosing to target us.
Donald Trump's on and off tariff threats spike global energy prices. Trump administration deletes climate change and environmental justice across the government. Plus,
this is the time of year when we're trying to store water in our reservoirs for the very hot, dry summer that looks like is coming.
And Trump dumped billions of gallons of much needed reservoir water in California.
All of that idiocy and more straight ahead. Him, not you. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Believe it or not, you know, they were having restrictions. They wanted to restrict you to 38 gallons of water a day. That sounds like a lot, but it's not. When you're a rich person and you like to take a shower.
That's a good one. Poor people, they don't need to shower at all. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, we're 3 weeks in and I'm already exhausted by how much of an idiot he is. Therefore, over to you. What do you got for us in your latest report?
Well, first, on Monday, Donald Trump roiled global stock markets and spiked oil and gas futures after he imposed tariffs on most imports from Canada, the United States' largest source of crude oil and natural gas.
Good for his funders, bad for his voters.
Trump temporarily paused the tariffs, but the impacts remained. A supplier of heating oil in New England announced an immediate price hike for residential customers. Analysts warn that the threat of tariffs persists and to expect higher prices for diesel, heating oil, jet fuel, gasoline, propane, and more. Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia on CNN pointed out the irrationality of Trump's tariffs.
And I'm struck by the irony of last week the president signed an emergency order regarding energy. There's an energy emergency, and he just put a 10% tariff on energy from Canada. He is increasing prices at the pump, and at the same time, he's saying there's an energy emergency.
That's not irony, you're being struck by, Senator. That's idiocy.
Also, dozens of federal agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency and the Departments of Agriculture and Transportation, have deleted references to climate change and environmental justice from their websites and canceled climate-related initiatives.
Well, because if they're not on their websites, it doesn't exist, right?
The New York Times reports that Trump's halt on climate spending has stalled clean energy projects, factory construction, and jobs, many in states that voted Republican. The EPA cut off $7 billion in grant funding from the Inflation Reduction Act that were already under contract to recipients of a nationwide low-income solar residential program. Mm. Several major agencies have issued gag orders, halting nearly all external communications and meetings, all of it as laid out in the right-wing manifesto, Project 2025.
Go figure.
Unelected billionaire Elon Musk over the weekend asserted control over key institutions that function as the central nervous system of the U.S. government, like the Treasury Department. Although funds appropriated by Congress can't be canceled, experts say that Musk's takeover of Treasury's sensitive payment system is a choke point that could be used to selectively shut off payments to anyone, like grants and funding already approved for clean energy projects. In other not great news, the Trump administration over the weekend directly interfered with California's water management system. First, California water regulators had to debunk Trump's false claims that the U.S. military had turned on the water in the state, part of his attacks on the state's leaders over the deadly Los Angeles fires. And then, days after Trump's false statements, administration officials, without warning, ordered the surprise release of billions of gallons of water from two federally owned dams in California's Central Valley. Experts say that water cannot physically get to Los Angeles and will not help farmers because it's the wrong time of year for it. Trump's colossal mismanagement of water will hurt farmers, they say, because it was already earmarked for use in the dry summer months. And the water was released without any coordination, increasing flood damage risks.
This idiot released 2.2 billion gallons of water, much of which is going to end up in the ocean, none of which is going to end up down here in Los Angeles, where our reservoirs are already full.
And finally, also not great news, a new study shows that microplastics are making their way into human brains with potentially dangerous effects on people's health and mental fitness. In a small study of cadavers, researchers found tiny shards of plastic waste are passing through the blood-brain barrier and into human brains, with higher levels in brains with dementia, raising questions about the possible health consequences of exposure to plastics.
Anyone check Trump's brain lately? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's not sane. It's not sane. I just want someone to save me.
No. None of it is sane. We got to get
it is
out.
Not.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download all of them for free anytime at bradblog.com. That is made possible thanks to those of you who hit a donate button when you're over there. It is always greatly appreciated. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves during these troubling times. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, particularly Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow with Digby and Driftglass.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yep.
That's tomorrow on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.